To begin.
Hey, what is up, guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Social Primate Podcast. Today, our guest is Raul Gonzalez, and he's making a call right now from Amsterdam. What's up, man?
Saludos. ¿Cómo están todos allá?
So with that being said, man, I mean, give us a little bit of background. I came across your work through the, it's pronounced Mictlan murals, right?
Yeah, I grew up in an Iso village. As a kid, as a baby, my mom took us to Mexico. So I grew up in Mexico, and my mom took us back and forth. So the first place I remember was Mexico, the rancho, you know, in the milpas and all that, and where we're from. I'm from this little place called Juanacaixtle, San Antonio, which is near Juanacatlán. Juanacatlán is in Jalisco, and it's near Chapala. When I grew up through there, it was a real small town. We have some real beautiful waterfalls that, unfortunately, right now, they're one of the most toxic rivers, El Rio Santiago, in Mexico. A lot of people are dying from just the pollution that the companies were spitting out there. But that's my first memories, is growing up in Mexico and then in the projects, which was in Boyle Heights.
Yeah, and it's crazy because there's a big drastic change in your environment, right? You know, like Mexico, it's for the most part, right? I guess in the areas that you initially grew up in, there was like these open fields and just space where you can kind of like just really connect with nature and environment.
It's a real different coming from a rancho to the projects.
To the projects, yeah.
1980s, yeah. I'm from 77, so when I was a child, I was in the 80s, in the early 80s, coming up right there. So
now you've lived in three different areas, right? Like three different life changes that you went through, right? You went from Mexico to here in Boyle Heights, East LA, basically, and then now you're in Amsterdam. So have you been able to get at least a well-rounded taste of what different circumstances mean to people?
What it is that for me personally, I don't know about everyone, but you know, a lot of people have the same experience, that our parents left their town to somewhere where they don't know where they're going, mm-hmm. and to make a home, you know. And so I kind of saw it in a similar way, you know, is that, you know, what gives our parents or grandparents or that courage to just say, fuck it, you know? We're going to go over there and see if it's better, just to see how it is. And you know, it's something that's where people move up and down in the land there, you know, to come this far over here. It's also, in a way, I saw it similar, you know? It's like, my mom would have done it, so.
And that's what one thing that kind of like, sometimes it's on my mind pretty often, like the idea of risk taking, because what bigger risk is there than just basically uprooting yourself and going somewhere else to reestablish new roots? That's a huge risk, and it's a risk that a lot of our, you know, older generations or people as close as our parents have been through, that struggle of having to restart. So fact that sometimes with us, like, oh, we get stuck to one area, and I'm in that because I've been LA, you know, born and raised. But I haven't had the opportunity to really explore outside this area, because maybe there's a part inside of me that I'm a little afraid of, you know, like, fuck, what if I'm not accepted there? What if I don't belong? I think that's something that's always in our heads too.
You know, when I was growing up in the projects, a lot of us there, and a lot of the other kids there, they had never left the projects, not even to the beach, you know? So I remember even the first time we went to the beach, because my mom didn't have time to take us to the beach. And people from the, there was this group there called the Clean and Green, that I was working with them 1993. I was in the seventh grade. And they took us to the beach, and they also took us to see the snow. And so that's something that I got from a young age too. That was like, you know, it, that I also see now, that back then a lot of us kids, we didn't get a chance to step out of our hood, you know? And that also kind of, it kind of limits us to what's out there, you know, like to see and to absorb, you know, what, you know, like to see the beach, you know, that's fucking dope, you know?
Yeah.
But if you never see it, then it's kind of fucked up.
But I feel like, again, that the whole idea of risk is highlighted very importantly in your work, because, again, just what you do, just murals, you know, just art in the street in general is already considered like savage to some people, like, you know, especially for people in city or in official positions, they're like, nah, this can't be happening. So you're already taking a risk as it is to try to put this out there, right? Create this art, and on top of that, have it carried a message that is more than likely going to be frowned upon by the people in power.
Well, you know, the story from that comes from the story of the founding of the Mictlan murals, where it all pretty much comes from. It's a way of redeeming myself. You know, I grew up, like I said, in the housing projects. We had a lot of influence there that was probably considered criminal. I mean, that is probably is considered criminal, yeah?
Yeah.
And so a lot of the shit we did there to make money, to just survive, was not that good. And, you know, I'm not going to snitch on myself, but I decided to change my life around. I never became no crackhead, but I had enough money to go to school, you know? So I put myself in school with that shit. And I thought about, I learned big words. I had an epiphany, you know?
Mm-hmm.
One day I saw something happen in front of me that is like missing the bullet missed you by an inch. And that kind of made me see things in a different way. I wasn't a religious person or nothing, but that kind of made me think like, oh shit, you know, I could have been in that other side and put in a cage or some shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to change it. And when I went to East LA College, I put some of my money into just educating myself, you know? I took some Chicano studies classes because it was one of the electives. I didn't even know what it was. And that really opened my eyes to a lot of things, you know, because growing up, again, you're Mexican, you know, I'm coming from Mexico for sure. And I'm growing up in the projects, which is a real confusing situation where you have a lot of violence, a lot of, you know, you got to choose a gang. You can't be from nowhere, you know. It's you're forced into a life, and that kind of makes you see things as you're growing up. When your homies are getting locked up or getting killed for something that's unattainable, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so the things that I learned at the community college was some knowledge of self, but also that I had to do something with, you know, because I always did graffiti. So, but I had to be useful, you know, it couldn't just be, how you say, for myself, you know, it can't be just about me, you know, because I'm a human, you know, I know that when you do damage, like the kind of shit that we did growing up, and then you kind of grow conscious, you gotta fix it, you know, so a lot of the stuff that came out of doing the murals had to do with how do we repair some of the damage we did. And which was like perpetuating the gang culture, you know, like how do you flip that?
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was Mictlan means the place of our common ground. It also means the place of rest and transformation. The place of our common ground means that it doesn't matter your age, it doesn't matter how you look, it doesn't matter what you know, we're all basically flesh and bone. And we're only here for a small period of time. And Mictlan is the place where we go to rest and transform, with rest and transformation. So that's where the whole thing Mictlan murals came from, that we have to find the common ground. What is the common ground? And the common ground is that, you know, we have a lot of things that separates us. Age, wages, education, race, you know, male, female, ideologies. But what is our common ground? Aside from that we're just temporary, is that we're native people. You know, we have the roots. And so the focus for the murals was, we're going to paint what they burned. We're going to paint what they took away from us. And that's going to be a way to create a common ground between these gangs that are saying, I'm from this street or I'm from that street, or I call myself this neighborhood or that neighborhood, and to see all ourselves as we're all the same. You know, and when you see a image of a what they call the Aztec or the Mexica, they all identify with the same image. Just like when you see the image of the Virgen de Guadalupe, they identify with the image. So the idea was to create images that have power, which is our culture, our roots, and give that power back to the people. And yeah, you know, the government, in a way, didn't want us to do it, but we're smarter than them. I took a business class, and I learned about contracts, so they can't go against a contract once it's signed. You know, So we got away with a lot of shit, you know? We're painting cool shit for the people, but I had to be smarter than them, you know?
Hell yeah. It's powerful, man. What you just said is powerful, because I think one thing that's easy to forget about in people, individuals, people that others might look up to, or just, you know, you see somebody and you immediately think they're one way or another, right? So, but in your case, like, you're being honest with the fact that you're able to acknowledge the stuff, the wrongs that you did before, and know that you want to do right by them. And I think that's, you know, that's a better summarization of what it means to be doing things for the right intentions, because you're coming at it from already knowing what the pain that you might have caused, right? Even if it's not physical pain, the fact is that
we're just being reckless.
Yeah, you know, just exactly, and you can't really blame yourself as well for not knowing then. You know, it's just stuff that you got into, but being able to grow into yourself means accepting that part, and then continuing to improve yourself, knowing that that part of you did exist. And I think that's where you have this real growth, right? And again, then you're able to provide a message that is legit pure to the people with the right intentions.
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing too, what you just said, intentions. The intention was, we're not gonna write our names, so we signed up with Mictlan Murals, meaning Mictlan is a place of our common ground. And the murals was, you know, because we're doing murals. But I didn't like people signing their names. I didn't sign my name. At the time I was doing the murals, it was from 1998 to 2020. So I would say about 90% of them have not even Mictlan murals on it. It's just a wall, you know? And the idea behind that is that I did all these murals with the people's support, where I would go around the neighborhood and we would do workshops in one of the local places, like a community center or the Boys and Girls Club or whatever. And we'll have meetings about it. And the whole idea was, how do we create images that have power, but also that everyone can agree with, you know? Because you don't want to come with the savior mentality, you know? Like, I come with the solutions. I come with the tools, you know, and with the skills to help you do it. But we do it together, you know? Everybody gets to paint. Everybody gets to be part of the design. You don't have to be an artist or a painter to come up with a good idea. So that's the intention, is to include everyone, to make it everyone's wall. And in the end, you know, I have a message that's for the future. Because also the idea is, how do we create messages that talk about solutions? Even if we ask to visualize something that doesn't exist, how do you project it in an image so that it can manifest? You know, so that was the whole idea of putting these images in. And it's also, like I said, images that have power. You know, it's not just that I'm going to paint a fucking pretty picture, or that I'm coming up with an idea by myself. These murals are for the people, because they're in public space. So it has to be useful for the public. It can't be just selling a product like myself as an artist, or a Coca-Cola, or a fucking, you know, it's to counter the miseducation and the advertisement pollution, you know, because everything you see out there is images that are trying to sell you something. And the murals, that's not the purpose. It's more about education.
Yeah, dude. Like, first, like, I was, while you were telling me this, I was kind of, going back into a little what you had said previously about just gangs and just like the way that they, it attaches to their identity in a sense, right? Like, I feel like a lot of the times, like the youth in this case, just need some sort of ownership, right? Because to an extent, them doing these marks on the walls and trying to represent like these streets or blocks, it makes them feel like they are part of something, right? Like, that, first and foremost, that's a key part in just humanity in general. We want to be part of something. And secondly, you want to have your own identity. But if you don't understand the power of community identification and a representation of where you're coming from, then at that point, you're just going to resort to trying to find any sorts of means to just be like, hey, I'm just going to fucking tag these initials up here and hope that this gives me that recognition, you know? But when you bring somebody like you, or somebody like, you know, in that same field, to come and try to bring something to the community where it can empower them, then you get that cultural ownership about where you're coming from, you know, because it makes you feel like this, hey, I'm part of this.
Yeah. It is, and we're also, you don't have to know how to read the codices to identify with it.
Yeah.
You know, the same thing with the images of like the end of Guadalupe or anything like that. It has, you already identify with it because it's been in, you know, in your culture so long.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you know, the thing with doing the sick graffiti and going out there, it's just that the youth want to express themselves.
Yeah.
You know? It's criminalized, you know, to express yourself, because any other way they want you to express yourself is connected to a institution. You have to be expressing yourself in sports through a school or in sports through a park, or if you do art, you have to do it through the institution of, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So not everybody fits in those boxes, you know? Like for me in school, I was in gifted classes as a youth in Hollenbeck middle school, and then they kicked me out because, you know, it's just you know, not everybody can just you know, sit in there and listen the whole time, you know, especially when they're telling you the same story over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, so I think that the way that the youth go out and express themselves too with the graffiti and all that is really natural, you know, because I feel like the youngsters, when they go out and do it, you get a rush and it's fun and this mm-hmm. and that. But the ones that are more serious about it, they're really passionate about it. And you can see it, they continue doing it over the years. And they progress and they, you know, you can see that when they're serious. When the kids are just doing it for fun, it's just, you know, they're bored and shit.
Yeah. But, you know, but everybody had their own traits. And I also did see that those individuals growing up in high school and middle school, that they started also graffiti. Then they started doing like little murals and other fucking some sort of bigger multi-disciplinary artists. And I'm just like, damn, those are the ones that were really into it, just like you said right now, that really pursued something outside of just like the educational system.
You know what it is with that? What I see with that is that the drive to do what, you know, what you have a passion for, you know, so you do it by any means.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's dope to see. I've seen a lot of people come up from youngsters, people that came up alongside with me and shit like that. And, you know, it's really dope to see that, you know. It's good to see that the spirit from our culture, it just shoots out of us, you know, from music to poetry. You know, nowadays, you put it on paper, and with the technology, you can just, you know, digitize that shit, put on a shirt, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The tools are for sure there to empower anybody who again, has a drive, a motivation. Like, the tools are there. Like, and this is what I tell, like, people, they'll be like, hey, like, give me some advice. Like, how do you stay consistent? I was like, dude, it's not, you can't just stay consistent. You gotta fight the urge to, like, not do shit by saying, like, fuck it, I'm still gonna get it done, you know? And, like, it's like this eternal battle all the time.
Sometimes, instead of buying new shoes, you go buy some new paint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead, you know, you're just investing in yourself. That pushes people to do their craft too. You know, to have the supplies, to have the things accessible. You don't have to steal them and shit.
Yeah, for reals. I grew up like I was a young kid, like in the 90s and 2010s and shit, or early 2000s. So, like, I feel like I got a small taste of what it meant to just kind of just go out and want to see some cool art and like be interested in your surroundings. Because, you know, nowadays you get a lot of your consumption from this device, you know. So when you go out and you see this big ass wall or you see the big ass mural, you're like, holy fuck, this is fucking sick, dude, you know. Like, instead of seeing it on a small screen, there's this power, this connection that you have when you actually see these pieces in real life.
Simone.
Yeah, man. But, you know, one thing I did want to bring up is just like I found it kind of like interesting, like the relation of how, like, in terms of our history, like, you know, of La Raza, let's say, at least in the last, let's say, throw it back for the last fucking 100 years, has been like this cycle of like recycling whitewashed information and just kind of trying to hide like real historical events that happened that had impacts on our communities, right? And again, it's that whitewashing. And I thought it was like this weird connection again to how they actually do this physically with walls when there's art that's being trying to put up that a community can look up to, you know, for hope in a sense. And they go in here and they wash it down, they spray it down, or they take it down and make it super hard just to be able to have this self-expression. And I think that's annoying.
The people that erase the murals, that hate on the culture, they want to kill the inspiration. You know? It's just like a party pooper.
Yeah.
They want to kill the inspiration because they know that the culture is real powerful. But it also has another side to it. It shows the fact that the land actually was occupied with indigenous people before the colonization came. You know, because that part of the history, they just kind of sweep under the rug, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like Christopher Columbus came and everything was fine after that. But what about before that? Yeah, a lot of the information that's out there about the native cultures is very, like, very, you know, one-sided and, you know, racist, really. Because they don't talk about the form of government. Like, the United States of America is based on the Six Nation League from the Haudenosaunee or the Iroquois Nation. They base their government on an indigenous confederation. In Mexico, they have a system, the Calvuri system, which was pretty much a form of government that is pretty much copied. It's the same thing. You know, and the reason that happened was because the mice, the corn, you know, the simple, the elote, the corn created civilization. People were not having to go and be at war because there was corn. There was food. The way that Europe developed versus the way that the people developed in the Western Hemisphere is totally different. You know, they had a whole different system of government. In the European countries, they still have kings. And they say, oh, the Aztecs had the Aztec emperor, the Aztec whatever. But that's not true. They had a Tlatoani. And the Tlatoani was the person chosen to speak for the people. And it wasn't just a Tlatoani. It was a Tlatoani and a Siwakot, which was like a administrator and a person that executes the orders. So someone that administrates it and someone that executes it. And they were chosen by the elders. So the whole government system and the way that they talk about our native cultures is they don't give no credit. You know, that even the modern systems are based on that. They say democracy came from Greece. We know that Benjamin Franklin said that he got the idea to create the Confederacy or the United States from the Confederacy of the Iroquois Nation. So, you know, all of that is in the books, but that's where they hide a lot of the stuff in the books. People look at them.
It's so ridiculous that we think that we're in this position in the history of humans that we're so advanced where we can have these conversations with somebody across the world when this will take months or years to get to, you know, through letter.
Yeah.
And our sociological levels have not expanded so much in the last fucking century, you know, in some aspects. I mean, for sure, there's movements that have happened and stuff, you know, not to not give them credit, but sometimes just the way people behave is like, what the fuck?
Well, for us is education. This is one of my favorite quotes. I painted this quote on a lot of murals. It's education is the passport to the future, because those who plan today, I forgot how it goes. It's a Malcolm X quote. Uh-huh. But pretty much the education is how, you know, get ahead, because we're very limited in America. You know, America, they speak the official language is English, and then in Mexico is Spanish. But from our indigenous languages, there's hundreds, probably thousands.
Mm-hmm.
And even in communicating in different languages in Europe, here in the Netherlands, they speak what they call Dutch. But if you're a Dutch person, you could understand German. And if you're German, you could understand Swedish and Austrian. If you're Swedish and Austrian, you could understand the language from the people of Finland and Denmark. So the languages are all pretty much, they have a lot of languages, but they're really lumped up into three or four main languages.
Mm-hmm.
Portuguese, Spanish, Italian, real similar. You could almost, if you speak Spanish, you could understand it. But again, it's information and education, and the amount of information that we get in America compared to what they get in other countries, like even in Mexico, you get Spanish, but they give you English now.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, you get it as an option. It's not really forced on you. But also being able to control information is also limiting what people are able to read and know, you know?
Exactly.
So then, yeah, education is a big deal in our communities.
Yeah, I pulled up the quote here. It says, education is a passport to the future, for tomorrow belongs to those who prepare for it today.
A lot of the work I did was in schools.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm not anti-school. I'm not anti-education, but I am anti-misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the shit that the kids are getting in school is misinformation. Like I said earlier, how they downplay our indigenous cultures and the contributions they've done to the world. The information that we're getting in school is very limited in the United States. You know, so that kind of limits our... If you don't know, you could see farther than a mountain, you're only going to live towards a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know there's more behind it, then your mind can expand. And they keep the minds there very limited. You know, so when the kind of shit that I would speak, it would trip people out because it's like, well, you're a fucking dude from the projects. Well, you know, I know how to read. You know, and mm-hmm. I know how to read in two languages. And that helped me a lot, you know, to just read, you know, to inform myself. Before the internet. Nowadays, you have the internet. I'd be downloading books and fucking up my storage on my phone. But,
yeah, for a good cause. Yeah, yeah.
But you know what I mean? It's information that's out there that, mm-hmm. that people should take advantage of. And the fact that people don't says a lot because the culture in America is also very, the TV raised a lot of children.
Yeah.
Now it's YouTube. You also, you have a lot of misinformation. And that creates confusion. And confusion, and we say, I guess in a military term, confusion in the battlefield makes it easy to conquer people.
Yeah, for sure. It's psychological warfare. For sure, there's a lot of psyops going on around with the way they're trying to either spread out or stop the information from going out. And yeah, I mean, that's where it kind of connects to the metaphor earlier we were talking about growth. Like, we know, right? If you educate yourself, you know the history, the dark history of the United States and its affiliation with other things around the world. Now, if you really took the time to learn that, you'll find the answers. You'll find the books and the resources that prove this as factual evidence. Now, we were talking about growth. Like, the only way that you can experience real growth is if you come to terms with your past. You accept it for who it was, right? That you didn't know any better at that time, but you can now make the the awareness and be like, oh, fuck, I got to do better. And as a country, we are not there yet because, you know, even them as a whole, they're still fighting this, like, nah, we didn't do that really. Like, you know, we're doing good stuff now, but it's like not accepting it to be able to progress into its next fucking stage, if there is a stage or whatever comes next.
There's this guy that I used to drive around in LA. He passed away in 2012. He was really well known in the black community.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Coakley. He always told us a lot of stuff because he's an older man, but they've been in this battle for a long time. The African nation, the people that were stolen from Africa, they've had a long time dealing with the government, and he always gave us a lot of information. You know, one of them was talking about, you know, what they consider a threat.
Mm-hmm.
They consider a threat intent plus capability equals threat. So if you have the intentions but don't have the capability, you're not a threat.
Mm.
If you have the capability but don't have the intentions, you're not a threat. But if you have capability plus intentions equals threat. Do you believe there's a mafia that exists. Does a mafia exist in the unions? Does a mafia exist in Hollywood? Does a mafia exist in the medical world? Does a mafia exist in the government? Yes, it does. You know, it's a club that only certain people can get in. It's controlled by people's personal interests. And how is it that people are billionaires, trillionaires, and then that there's homelessness? How does that work? You know, how does it work that there's these systems that allow for the pollution of land that's on native territories, like what's happening in the Diné or in the Apache lands, everywhere? And the people that are from those lands don't have a right to even themselves try to make a profit. You know, it's because they want to keep that equation controlled. Intent plus capability equals threat. So, you know, the government itself, it's kind of fucked up because, again, who created the Constitution were slave owners. Yet they say every man is created equal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how can you write that when you have slaves in the back and you're selling your babies? That's Jefferson. And so that kind of says a lot, you know, of how the country's run. You know, when you have a two-party system and you really have no choice, it's like you're going to flip a coin. How do they say that? No, not even that. They say it's a right wing and a left wing, but it's still the same rotten bird.
Mm-hmm.
So the system itself, you know, and a lot of countries, they change their constitution every 20 years. And a lot of countries. And this one, they haven't changed it in 67 years.
Dude.
So a lot of the inequalities and injustice is designed that way, because if people are so busy fighting each other and fighting over things that are, even fighting over football games, they're too busy to see what's really going on.
Yeah, it's those distractions again that they're put in place. And again, it reminds me of, like, for example, like, let's say, so as a person, you realize that the solution comes from, like, analyzing your situation and learning how to stop it from happening again. So I'm assuming, you know, when we had, like, the whole civil rights movement, which is the most maybe recent biggest social justice thing that happened, we had obviously the government more than likely analyzing these events, what led up to them and how they can stop this from happening again, right? So if they're taking those cues as just as any sane person would, then you can start applying things that are going to distract people enough from them joining up to cause these type of civil unrest. And I think that's the mind game that they're playing. And it's fucking crazy to me.
Personally, yeah, I don't know. But the president now, Biden,
mm-hmm.
he dropped a bunch of bombs in Yemen.
Yeah.
That's another way where they try to, you know, just distract, you know, like take your mind off what's going on, and now you have a different problem.
Yeah.
The way that they manipulate, and or it's something in the news, or it's the fucking aliens, whatever.
Yeah, for reals.
they're gonna come up with something. Yeah, it's a big distraction, you know. I think the biggest threat for them is education. You know, education is when people start to assert their rights. You know, I've been to court a few times for traffic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way you win there is if the policeman doesn't show up. If he doesn't show up, then you win. But if he shows up, even if you have evidence that they're wrong, they still win because he showed up.
Fuck yeah.
And so this is one thing that I learned in the year 2011. Yeah, 2011, there was something that happened in Los Angeles regarding the murals. The city of Los Angeles got sued, or I think maybe 2010. I may be a little too far. It could even be 2009. But the city of LA got sued by a, you know the super graphics, those big giant signs that, you know, for Nike or whatever that are painted, hand painted, like.
Oh yeah, on the side of the buildings.
A bunch of those.
Yeah.
Those dudes are advertisement companies. They charge to paint those, you know, $200,000,
$300,000. Damn.
Okay. That's what they charge Nike or Apple or whatever, whoever pays them. Sometimes it's probably less, maybe $30,000. But it's still a big budget, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The beef was that they have to pay advertisement fees. to the city of NA building and safety. So they have to pay, you know, a certain amount. And there was a technicality on the law. Between in the 1960s and 70s, when the Chicano movement was going on, they were doing a lot of murals. But in the 1980s, the city of LA wanted to find a way to put them in a code, to classify them, you know, to put them in their law.
Uh-huh.
So they have to get a permit or some shit. And so they put it in the code for sign painting. So the sign painters, when they're going to do a sign job or an advertisement, they have to pay a certain tax, you know what I mean? And so the advertisers, the giant advertisers, were doing this since 1984 all the way to 2009 or whatever, when they saw that murals were on the same law. So they said, hey, murals don't have to pay because murals are public art that are done for community. Murals don't have to pay this tax, but they're under the same law. Why do we have to pay?
Mm-hmm.
So you were going to sue you. Boom, they sued and they won. So one company won. Guess what happened? 15 other companies sued. If they all sue, and they're all gonna win because stupid paper, you know?
Yeah.
The city's gonna not go bankrupt, but they're gonna lose a shitload of money. So they put a moratorium on murals. I think it was in the year 2001 or 2000 when they stopped it. Boom, they stopped allowing people to do murals in the city of LA. So we kept doing murals because fuck them, you know?
Yeah.
and so the other thing with that was that in the year, I guess, I don't know if it was 2009 or 2011, you know, my mind's a little blurry, but it around 2011, the city of LA wanted to create a new law just for murals and a new law just for sign painting to separate it so that, you know, murals can still continue. And the sign painting can still continue, and now you can have a clear line on what is advertisement and what is public art, you know, so that they're not on the same thing. Because people in the government are not too smart. So what do? They go to get a copy of a existing law from Portland, Oregon, and they try to implement it in L.A., which that law was that there was only going to be murals allowed in certain places in the city, like a mural district,
mm-hmm.
that there's going to be a certain height that you couldn't paint windows or a door. I mean, they were just doing all kinds of weird shit. And they were going to charge, like, I don't know, fucking $300 or something.
Dude, just to get, like, the permit type or what?
Yeah, just to do a mural. Yeah, to do a mural. They were putting all these regulations and stuff like that. But, again, this is a document they got from Portland, Oregon. So when I heard about this, me and a few artists, you know, got together. We called, you know, we all know each other, so we called a few more muralists, and we showed up to the city as a group, went there and said, fuck you guys, this is not cool. If we're gonna create a law for murals, you should involve the muralists and the people from LA, not some motherfuckers from Portland that don't know shit about us here. So pretty much, long story short, we went against the city and won, and we wrote the mural, I can't even think of the word, but you know what I mean? We pretty much wrote the code for the murals in LA.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
It was a group of us, a bunch of older muralists, a bunch of young muralists, a bunch of babies, and graffiti writers, and all of us got together, and we were part of that process, and they tried to give us awards and shit, and I was just like, nah, give us some money.
For reals, you know? The fuck? Just a fucking trophy and like, or fucking paper?
So I ended up getting a job fixing all the murals in the freeway on the 101.
Mm-hmm.
So from 2011 to 2013, I was working on that. And I found out two major things I learned from that, even though we won. Two major things I learned from that. One was our opposition. Our opposition was the sign companies and the city and government, and we beat them. So the guy that lost, this is what he told me, and I'm not trying to be like stereotype it, but it was this white boy with a suit, you know, with glasses, mm-hmm. looking like Clark Kent, 1950s and shit. He told me, you know what, Raul? You're right. You guys are right. But in this system, it's not about who's right or wrong. It's about who could sit here the longest. You know what a lobbyist is? What a lobbyist does? What they do?
Yeah.
They get paid to sit there to fucking maybe like about a year after we won, they changed the law because we were not there. Nobody knew. They did it in public, but nobody knew because they were paying somebody to sit there all year and wait it out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The other thing I learned, biggest thing I learned was if you can't beat them, hire them. So a lot of the people in our movement that beat the city, that beat this giant industry, grassroots, a lot of our leaders ended up getting hired by those people that we were fighting.
Yeah.
I didn't. They offered me the job. I said, fuck no. Because it's my integrity, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm going to be saying this and saying that. And then going to go get baptized or some shit or pick up a crack pipe. I'm not going to do that. You know?
Yeah, dude, that's different. Fucking. But
that's the two major things I learned. Is about money, and it's about money again, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. It's harsh to say, but yeah, I mean that's what it is. If you're joining the opposition at that point, yeah, you're a vendido, you know. And I know you can bring in the case where, like, you know, everybody's situation is different, and we may not be there to fully understand the extremities of why they're making those decisions. But at some point, you do have to keep some integrity for yourself. God damn it! Like, that's the only thing you got.
Well, it's like I said, the mafia exists. That's how they operate. And so the reason education is so important and why the murals we're creating with this information is to empower people to realize that we have the power to not only change it or make it better, but to, you know, completely redesign it, you know, the system.
Yeah.
You know, because people live there, but it's really hard to do it in a place so established, like a giant city like Los Angeles. You know, I was telling you the size of the Netherlands earlier, LA County plus a little bit of Orange County, 17, 18 million people. How many people are in LA County and Orange County? You know, even if you include the Inner Empire. You for sure got way more than that. Or even close, maybe even, you know, but it's his own country. But you have, it's so polarized, and then, you know, like I said, here people are more integrated, and over there we're so segregated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have your Mexican side, you have your black side, you have your Chinese side, you have your rich side,
yeah,
which is the white side. You know, you have your, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're segregated in their own corners, and here is a little different. You know, well, from what I see in Amsterdam, you know, but yeah, I mean, it's if you keep the people divided and ignorant, the result's gonna be the chaos you see in a lot of places.
Yeah.
So the purpose for the murals is always, like, for me was always education, but also bringing up our ancestors with it, because our ancestors had that power of giving us the inspiration of seeing what they did. You know, what they were able to accomplish and what they could have accomplished, which means it's up to us to do it. One of the murals I painted was about the guy that invented the color TV, and his invention was what was used on the Voyager, the probe they sent out to space in 1977, and the year I was born. And they sent that little spaceship in space, and they were sending back images, the first images we saw of Pluto, of Saturn. They were sent through color images using some of the technology from this Mexican dude.
I think I pulled it up here. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but Guillermo González Camarena.
And I mean, you know, that kind of information is, it could inspire someone.
Yeah.
If you put it in a mural where everyone can see it, it gives you some, not that it's like pride is wrong, but it does give you pride in, you know, where you come from.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the whole time in America, you know, with people like Donald Trump or just the right-wing media, whatever, they put down the Mexican. Like, oh, we're just a farm worker, or we're just the albañil, you know? The agriculture is also science. It's a system where they have a ladder where it's up and down. And our system of our ancestors is a circle where we all face each other. So we're equal. And their system, you're in the top or you're in the bottom. But again, remember, mi clan murals are coming down. On the top or on the bottom. We're all flesh and bone, temporary.
Powerful, powerful words, man. Dude, thank you for making the time to do the show and just to help this, have this conversation from across the world. You know, I hope anybody in between here and Amsterdam gets to hear this conversation and find some inspiration, you know, through this auditory experience. And, you know, by the time they see your actual art and your visual stuff, that's just going to be the cherry on top for them. But
appreciate it, bro.
Raul, man, I appreciate
it. Thank you.
With that being said, for people to find your artwork, to get more information about you, what is the best place to reach you?
Right now, the Instagram. Just, you know, I have my people can contact me through there, and I have a lot of my work on there. But even if you just Google Mictlan murals, there's a few YouTube videos of me painting or talking shit.
Hell yeah. No, man. Well, thank you again for making the time. I hope this is not the last time we have a conversation, and we'll see you around, dude.
Appreciate it, huh? We didn't say. 250 produce, que toca lento, suena. En la esquina que me vio crecer, cuántas batallas tuvieron que ser para caer, entender, trascender, que la respuesta se encuentra en mi ser. En la esquina que me vio crecer, cuántas batallas tuvieron que ser para caer, entender, trascender. Que entre la luz oculto está el poder.
Con mis panas escribiendo penas, porque después de sufrir llegan las cosas buenas. Día de quincena, feliz porque no me falta nada en la cena. No es copia, yo siempre echo lo que me llena. Como Héctor para los míos soy cantante. Más y más arte de mi vida se parte. La vida y sus formas de enseñarte, desde la habitación haciendo que esto compacte, que visaje la vida. Pero el rap siempre es la salida, jugando al 100 hasta que acabe la partida. Abriendo la herida, bebiendo cerveza fría, para hacer magia la banda está reunida.
En épocas frías donde mi corazón se enfría, que el momento desafía y no tengo cabeza fría. A las energías se esquiva aquellas risas fingidas. Mentalidad podrida, el pensamiento desquiciado.
Aunque te sientas vacío, estás gritando y nadie escucha. Nadie piensa lo que sientes, solo esperan otra risa.
La intriga sigue viva y la tinta pide que escriba. Lo que no puedo explicarte si tú escuchas siempre esquiva.
Y aquí voy tan bipolar como la variación del clima. Un día pienso en la muerte y al otro busco sonrisas. El rap mantiene cuerdo que esté loco en mi cuaderno, para luego liberarlo en otro texto, en otro demo.
En conclusión, todo esfuerzo tiene compensación. Que inspire, que motive, que salga del corazón. Que fluya la energía al momento de la inspiración. Se basa en contenido explícito mezclado en son. Una canción que representa la revolución, la calle y las historias de todo aquel cantautor. Que expresa un mensaje que es sincero y sin pudor. El rap, el salvavidas ante toda situación. Esto está bobo, de zona 11 donde con mis socios desahogo. La ira, la alegría, lo que canto en los compases. Representantes de arte, estos sensis vuelven a hablarte. Son estilos voraces desde la fría que se hace.
Poeta de interferir dando alerta, Bogotá representa. Te subo a mis hermanos sin careta, siempre alerta, sin darle tanta vuelta. No se trata de apariencias, hablamos de la experiencia. El sudor en la frente, el criterio no se presta. En esto de la rima soy experta. Mi crew de otro planeta reencarnado en esta tierra. De la esquina de donde vengo se guerrea. Espera, creo en esto con la fe de romper todas las condenas. Otra noche con la banda donde el placando candela. Con un ron de Medellín para soltar toda esa mierda. Es un sueño, un proyecto, un legato, la leyenda. Somos fieras descarretas buscando cena en la mesa.
Buscando cena en la mesa.
En la esquina que me vio crecer, cuántas batallas tuvieron que ser para caer, entender, trascender, que la respuesta se encuentra en mi ser.
en la esquina que me vio crecer. Cuántas batallas tuvieron que ser para caer, entender, trascender. Que entre la luz oculto está el poder.